is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my good colleague and mentor, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, the author most recently of Noble State, the story of constitutional monarchy, an advantage, enormous advantage over the American Republic. However, we attend first to a transnational organization that recently met in Rio de Janeiro. It's called BRICS. Stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. However, it's much larger than that in intentionality and in possibilities for the future. It's beginning to organize itself in a new fashion here in the 21st century, one that is both possible, but at the same time non-understandable to me, which is why I need Gregory's help. Gregory, a very good evening to you. The five big ones I read off, although South Africa is aspirational more than real, they've been adding members these last years: Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, the UAE, Indonesia all added. Saudi Arabia possibly hasn't confirmed it yet. What does this describe, Gregory? Is there a 20th century way to think about BRICS? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, in fact, BRICS has become a loose organization of countries which often have very little to do with each other, but were gathered together in recent years, largely at the driving of the People's Republic of China, one of the original countries in the BRIC coalition. And the PRC wanted to create an anti-dollar, anti-US global organization to, if you like, bring down a peg the US dollar denomination of the global economy as the global standby or reserve currency, because China wanted to make its currency, the renminbi or the yuan, basically an internationally tradable currency. Now, BRICS is an organization which didn't have any real coherence other than when it was thought of as a concept by a series of New York bankers. They sought basically places for the U.S. to invest abroad, and they figured that the key economies to invest in were Brazil, Russia, India, and China. South Africa was added later, and as you say, really is more aspirational. But so BRICS was nothing really to do with states which had something in common with each other than that they were seen as a potentially good marketplace for U.S. investment. Now, today, you've got a number of those countries, Russia, India, and the People's Republic of China, and Brazil to a degree, who do want some degree of relief from being forced to cooperate under U.S. law by using U.S. dollars as their main trading mechanism. Because the United States has essentially said, if you use the U.S. dollar, you are subject to U.S. law. So they say, well, we want to use our own currency, or we want to use other currencies or other mediums of payment, which could include barter and counter trade. Now, the BRICS momentum got underway when Russia and China, and to a degree India, really started organizing how to get this body as a cohesive group, which could, if you like, divide the world away from the dollar dependency. And it hasn't worked. The recent summit in Rio de Janeiro, hosted by President Lula da Silva on July 6th and 7th, basically seemed to be a failure, or it seemed to be anticlimactic. But it was not, in fact, unimportant, because what it decided was that, no, the BRICS countries, by and large, were not interested in refusing to deal with the U.S. dollar altogether. They just wanted the freedom to use other modes of currency to avoid U.S. law and to use other mechanisms which could be more important on a bilateral in a bilateral nature, like trade, barter trade, and counter trade, and that sort of thing. So that's where it's going. And the big decision at Rio this year was that BRICS shapes up as not being an anti-American or anti-dollar mechanism. And this is big news. And it was inevitable in many respects, because none of the other currencies in the world have either the tradability and strength, nor do they have the mass numbers of currency units out there in the world to be used. And that's where the US dollar remains very, very strong and competitive and will likely remain so for some time. But what we have to realize is that, yes, the U.S. dollar is under pressure and to a degree under threat, largely because the incredible profitability of the last 40 or 50 years in terms of trade and wealth generation has been as a result of the end of World War II, the open lines of trade and supply chain, which have benefited all countries. So the United States today is no longer the sole source of funding and economic strength. Other countries have risen. So the United States then proportionately has less of the world's economy under its control. So that process is likely to go up and down for the foreseeable future. But the reality is that the United States economy in its own right has grown enormously, will continue to be very powerful. Countries will still want to rely on the dollar because they know it has a relatively stable value. So it's going to be there forever. But other countries have expressed their independence from the United States and from, if you like, other parenting organizations, whether that's the UN or BRICS itself, or the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, because they want to have some flexibility. They want to have some say over their own economies. They don't want to be dictated to by the IMF or the World Bank, which sometimes don't understand their conditions. So right now, I think it's actually a win for the US dollar. It's a win for the countries involved in BRICS and other countries around the world. Now, the United States may wish to continue to impose the dollar, and to do that, it will need to work a lot on its alliances and on its prestige and credibility, because what we're seeing in recent years under several administrations in the U.S. is that U.S. prestige, credibility, trust, and friendship around the world have declined significantly and continue to decline. So there's a job out there for the U.S. to do, but the reality is that the dollar is not under the kind of threat that the media have been saying for the last 3 or 4 years, that the sky was falling on the dollar.
Let me read a list of what are called partner countries and see if this fills in where they could be going with this. Algeria, Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Nigeria, Thailand, Turkey, Uganda, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. Gregory, no matter how I look at this, that doesn't add up to anything. It's all over the place. It's Central Asia. It's Nigeria. It's Africa. It's the Caribbean. It's kind of like, you know, who you invited to your birthday party was your sixth grade class. There's nothing in common except for once in a while you go to school together. What are they? What are they shaping? If it's not the dollar, what is the appeal? What do they get out of it?
Well, they do get some multilateral and bilateral trade understandings with each other, that Vietnam can deal with Nigeria and trade manufactured goods for Nigerian oil, or they will accept naira for Vietnamese exports, or vice versa. They each accepting each other's currencies. What China and Russia, but particularly the People's Republic of China, is trying to do is to recreate what we used to call the non-aligned movement or the third world, where this becomes a geopolitical bloc aimed at furthering the global reach, if you like, of the parent superpower, in this case, Beijing. And that's not going to work, I don't think, at this stage, largely because the PRC doesn't have any strength in its currency and its own economy is declining rapidly. And you've got the other side of the coin is that many of the states within BRICS are hostile with other member states of BRICS. India and China are very much strategically at odds. China and Russia are very much at odds with each other, something which is coming out even more dramatically over the past few days. The situation of this being a cohesive strategic bloc for Beijing to wage war with against the West is not realistic. And in fact, as the BRICS member states, including Brazil, get their act together, they're starting to see that, look, there are times when we're not going to want to deal with US dollars and we don't like Washington, but we're not going to cut off our nose to spite our face. We're going to deal in dollars when it's desirable to do so.
And we should then look upon the BRICS as available to all parties, not just China and Russia. They clearly have relations with Europe and with the United States at the same time. So they're in play. I'm trying to come up with a metaphor that describes such a melange of states.
Well, exactly. I think that BRICS is in play and, as you say, available to all comers, and the member states and the overall body will listen to anybody, in the same way that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the states of Central Asia, are available to do deals with the Europeans or the United States as much as they are with states within Eurasia. Nothing there which basically binds them in a NATO-like organization or something like that. It's a very loosely structured organization, and one which has built a new secretariat in the hopes of building something which gives them control of the greater part of the world's economy, but really is no defined strategic objective other than, how do we avoid being dictated to by some power, whether it's Washington or Beijing or Moscow?
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.